This is also why the power of why is like lost on us as a society. Because when you're a kid, if your parents say something, you'll question it. Because we are naturally curious, but your parents always shut you down by saying, because I said so. And then as we develop into adults, we learn not to ask why, because we always end up with this, because I said so. So as adults, we don't ask why. But like usually what happens is people just say, oh, because it's what I think. Why do you think that? Because I know it's true. Why do you think it's true? Because the Daily Mail said it when I was five. And that's what it usually is.
Yeah.
All like this is the interesting thing about belief systems. Is like every single belief has a root. Everything you believe to be true has come from something you were exposed to. Now, I won't get into the religion thing, because that's a whole philosophical argument as to like, you know, I'm a religious man myself, so like I don't think you come into contact with, but I don't know. We're not going to get that. But all of these other things that you believe, everything you believe to be true, has come from a stimulus that you were exposed to. And this is why most people, you know, you hear about like family cycles where people like don't break out of like a specific family situation. Like, you know, my grandpa was poor, my dad was poor, I'm poor, my son will be poor, my grandson will be poor. Like, you know, the cycles. It's because the thing that is being exposed to is cyclical in an environment. It repeats over and over again. The conditioning is usually the biggest precursor to someone's failure, the environment. And so all of you are here today as entrepreneurs because you were exposed to something a long time ago that changed the trajectory of your life. For me, it was a Tai Lopez ad when I was like 15 or 16. And I had the right psychological initial conditions for starting a business, which was basically being bullied and then wanting to like have control over my life so I didn't have to have a tyrannical boss and having women and all that stuff. And if you have like the conditions for post-traumatic growth and then someone comes along and they demonstrate a life you could live and manifest what you didn't have, then you take it. There's a quote from Freud that says the adult is developed to protect the child. And what that means is that who you grew up to be is designed by you to protect who you were. So for me, for example, something I suffer with is validation. Like wanting validation from people. It's why I bought a car. There's a lot of the things I've done. It's why I do it. And the reason I do that is because of what happened to me being bullied and stuff. So usually when I talk about it, I cry. As you can tell, you can probably feel it. And that's normal, right? It's fine to be vulnerable. But I can feel it. Maybe I'll cry. We'll see. But you guys get the point.
Yeah.
This is what it's about. You have to, like, if you want to understand yourself and if you want to understand what you're actually trying to do, you can't really have like a big vision until you've dealt with all the shit in your childhood. Because, one second, because if you want to create something that's bigger than yourself, then you have to have yourself as a whole. So if you've gone through something that you haven't resolved, your business currently exists as a vehicle for you to resolve it, right? That's how this works. Something happens to you when you're like 4 years old or 5 years old or something. Starting a business is fucking weird. It's such an abnormal behavior. Most people don't do it. It's very weird. You have to realize we are very strange people. So that means that we have something very strange has happened to us, right? So if something happens to you here, and you try and like, you know, the adult is built to protect the child, right, as it was with me. You start this business to make money. You say you want to make money, but really you want to impress your father. You want to get girls because you struggled with it. You don't want to be bullied again. There's any reason. I'm sure everyone in some way, shape, or form might relate to this, because it's kind of how it works, kind of impossible without it. Until you resolve what happened down here, this will always exist to protect this. The day I came up with the vision for Easy Grow was the day after I spent 3 hours crying about being bullied. And that's a true story, one that I've never really shared with anyone before. I had a therapist, and I sat down and I talked about it I've been working on it for a long, long time. And what I did was I went back, I pictured myself when I was 11 or 12, and I took myself mentally back to that. I watched it from the first person perspective and the third person perspective, and I cried. It was my girlfriend at the time, for probably about 4 hours. What that is called integration, right? Trauma is like, imagine that you are like stood in a swimming pool. Right, I got this from Mark Dharma. You're stood in a swimming pool, and the way it basically works is every time something bad happens to you, something traumatic, someone dying, someone leaving, someone being horrible to you, maybe you lose your mum in Asda when you're 3 years old and you just, it might not seem like a big deal, but this is how it happens, right? You're in a swimming pool and the water is up to your waist. Every time something traumatic happens, it's like a beach ball's being thrown at you, right? And the beach ball, you don't want to deal with it, so you shove it under the water, right? It's under the water, so you've got one hand holding it down. And underwater, it's requiring psychological pressure and energy, which is why this business compensates for this, right? Someone else throws another beach ball at you 3 years later, you push it down. Now you've got two hands down, you put one between your legs, you've got another hand up. Someone throws another beach ball, you catch it, down it goes. And now you've got three. And then what happens is someone throws another beach ball and you go to catch it, they all come up. And that's how breakdowns happen. If you have shit down here that you haven't dealt with, your business will always serve the purpose of you dealing with it. And it's impossible to come up with a huge vision or to transcend yourself until you've dealt with what happened when you were a kid. And it might not be when you were a kid, it could be like 15 years old. It could be recently.
Should the business serve the purpose to not be dealing with it? I don't fully get that. Is that a normative statement or an
It's up to you. But what I'm saying is all of you want a business, not because you want a business or money, but because you are trying to deal with something.
Right.
Maybe not for you. It might be a blanket generalization statement.
We talked about that once, where I said, I don't think I
then have it's, a then it's problem. Then it's fine. You'll know if you do. It's like, I can blanket statement, but it's not going to be true for everyone. But like, it's a very weird thing to want to do to start a business. And what that means is something very weird must have happened.
No, because I just see that there's no way I can, using the corporate route, become a millionaire.
Mm-hmm. Why do you want to become a millionaire?
Because I believe that life is much more higher quality when you are.
Why?
Because you get to meet much more interesting people. You get to live in a house where you want to live. You get to live in the way how you
want
to live.
Right, so you don't want to be a millionaire, you want control. Why do you want control? Don't answer the question, I'll stop digging down. But if you look, there's always a reason.
Yeah.
You don't just wake up one day and think, I want money. Because what happens is like, your brain exists, it's like a iceberg. Like, you know, this is an iceberg and this is the sea, right? This is wanting money and this is probably wanting a car, but then this is wanting your mum to love you. Now maybe it doesn't apply to you, that's fine, right? But for most people, most of the biggest leaps and bounds that I have made in business have come when I've cleaned something up down here. And I've still got a long, 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 long way to go. A business is a fantastic vehicle for personal development.
How much do you really want to solve that?
Mm-hmm.
How much do you really want to solve it? Because people are motivated to move away from the place of pain or towards a place of pleasure. And yours obviously was a big motivating factor to move away from that.
I hope I'm not projecting, by the way, and you guys actually resonate with this.
No, just like the infobiz.
Yeah. Go on.
If you solve that thing that you're running away from, and you run towards something else instead.
Yeah, so I hear your point. So you're basically, this is called a drive vacuum, by the way. So your argument or your point is like, what happens if all your motivation is coming from having this problem solved, then why would you solve it?
Yeah.
Right? So this is where complacency happens. So how many of you have got to a certain point in your business where you're making enough money to have dealt with the thing and then you stop working? Like how many of you have had like a plateau?
Yeah.
Right? So this happens to me and Bo, where we'll make a certain amount of money. The big one for everyone is like 10 grand a month. And you'll just sit there for like 7 months, 10 months, 12 months, 2 years. But why? It's because what's happened is what this person down here, you at a certain age, maybe you don't have a problem, right? Because maybe this is like a speculation, right? But you at a certain age, like for me, I'll give you a prime example. So I want to make money, like when I was, there's a lot of reasons as to why, right? And I'll be as vulnerable as I can with you guys. But one of the ones is in like college and secondary school, I could not get girls to save my life. It's like a huge like problem for me, right? So like, you know, this was off limits for me. Couldn't do it, right? So what happened is I started making money. I started making like 20 grand a month. I bought an Audi, I got a nice apartment, and I found some confidence. And then I could get girls. And then I just stopped working. Because I'd done it. This thing was satisfied, right? So your answer is that what will happen is you solve this through the business, typically.
Yeah, you said solve, but how much of it is still there? You know what I mean?
Say again?
If you say it's solved, I can get girls in that, but how much of it...
No, but you, it's not solved.
That's what I mean.
It's not solved. Yeah. So what it's done is you've... It's kind of like... this is like a hungry animal, right? And so what's happening is you can feed it, but then it will be hungry again. And it traps you. So the reason you want to get rid of it is because it traps you. Because you can't really do anything big. Like you can't transcend yourself and to build something huge if you've got this thing clawing you back. So the way you solve it is through something called shadow work. And I've never actually talked about this before because it requires me to go to a pretty dark place. Go on.
Jung.
Huh?
Carl Jung.
Yeah, Carl Jung. Yeah. Terrifying man, by the way. Okay. You guys are going to have to bear with me because it's not a very comfortable topic to discuss. So Carl Jung was a psychiatrist, psychotherapist from the 1900s to do with Freud and all that. And he basically had this idea that like when something traumatic happens to you, what basically happens, like your mind takes a snapshot of who you currently are and buries it. So you're going to have to bear with me because it's really fucking difficult to explain, right? So, all right, I can just give you the example. It's the easiest way. So this is me at 12 years old. And I get bullied badly for like a whole year, like all sorts of bad shit, very low status, awful, like it would do shit things to a person, right? What happens is eventually I stop being bullied. But because my brain doesn't want to deal with the pain of the low status and all of this shit, all the stuff that goes with it, is it buries it. I've caught the ball and I've put it under the water. So the only way for your brain to actually do that is to take this version of yourself and bury it in your unconscious. And what that means is it never gets resolved. So this always exists. This sits in your unconscious, still believing that it exists. So you move on, you turn into an adult, but inside of you there is still a child that's being bullied. And this is where self-sabotage comes from. Because you can make as much progress as you want towards a goal, but if unconsciously part of you is convinced that it's still being bullied, you're always going to break it back down. So the issue I had is I was trying to grow my business, but what would happen is I'd get to a point and plateau. And then I'd grow a little bit and plateau. And my growth looked like this, right? And what was happening is, and this is, maybe this is boring, right? But it worked for me. So I'm just sharing with you guys what actually worked for me. What was actually happening is, like, I was just convinced I was still being bullied unconsciously. And so every time I tried to gain control in my life, like, part of me would break it down. But have you guys had this before? Where you, like, you work and work and work, and then suddenly you just destroy everything. And then you plateau. You make progress, and you break it down. You've got a light side and like, well, it's like a dark side. And then you're like, why the f*** did I do this? And then you beat yourself up and get all angry and then you go again. And you exist in this cycle of like confidence, motivation, doubt, anger, fear, confidence, motivation. It just cycles around. Like, why the fuck does that happen? It's weird. It's not normal. But the reason it happens is because your conscious energy or your conscious spirit, for lack of better words, is trying to move forward away from the bad thing that happened. But this thing here is basically like, hang on a minute. This isn't us. We don't have control. It's impossible to behave out of alignment with the way you believe you are. It's called praxis, an identity thing. So if part of your identity unconsciously is tied to not having control and being subjected to tyranny, then that's always what you're going to look for.
You're out to sabotage yourself.
This is exactly where self-sabotage comes from. It's having part of yourself buried really fucking deep that you don't want to deal with. And every time you try and go up, this thing is just like, nope, we're down here. Like, this isn't us, this isn't me. And this is where the conflict of man comes from. Because we've all got this light side and then this dark side, where one week we'll be like incredible, on top of the world, confident, making progress. And then the next minute we're just eating Netflix, eating junk food, watching porn, being an idiot, doing bad things and breaking everything down, not replying to emails. We've all been there, right? So until you get rid of this, to answer your question, you're always going to, it's like trying to run, but you know when you see like people running with like a parachute on the back and they're trying to sprint, but the parachute holds them back? It's kind of how you do it. You'll still make progress and you'll still grow. But what happened is in February, so I was building Easy Grow at the time. In February, I'd been doing this shadow work for like probably a full year because I started doing it because of the mindset module. because I wanted to understand how it worked. I was like, oh, this would be interesting. So I spent like $2,000 on it. And then basically what happened is, like, in February I sort of had this breakthrough. And then what the whole goal of shadow work is called integration, where you basically take this part of you and you reimagine the trauma and you basically relive it. And you relive it from the perspective and frame of the man you've built or the man you are. And then you look at it and you're sort of taking in the child, like, hey, we don't have to worry about this anymore. We've got the control, you're safe, right? So this part never leaves, but you just comfort it. It's kind of like having a child. And so you bring it in, you say, hey, we're good. It's called integration. And then when you've integrated it and this thing's like, oh, I'm not being bullied anymore. Shit, like it opens its eyes. It's like, hang on a minute. Like, I'm in Dubai. What the fuck is this? Like, I'm not on the playground anymore on the floor, like crying, because that's where it's convinced it is. Because when you have trauma, it buries it. And that memory is replayed unconsciously. And then you build this unconscious identity and you cannot behave out of alignment with it. And this is why people go up and down and up and down and up and down. It's why when people try and lose weight, they put it back on. It's why when you try and quit smoking, you start smoking it. It's when you stop drinking, you start drinking again.
So Charlie, with this integration process, you take your current self, go back to your previous self that was bullied, and you replay the
It's trauma. Really hard to do.
So you replay the trauma, you don't bring that previous self to your current situation to see.
It's kind of like, look, I did this with a specific person, and she said an emotion about the past is a part of you trying to communicate. Because the only way this thing can communicate with you is through emotion. And the way it manifests that emotion is through breaking the shit down you tried to build. So it's the biggest symptom, and this is why I've never made a video on this, because it makes me really fucking emotional. I'm surprised I haven't cried yet, because it's dark. So this thing, all the emotions pop up, you know, 1 second.
Yeah.
And then the integration process, like what I did, I remember I was in my office, this was in Bristol, and I was downstairs, and I just finished this call, the shadow work call, and she suggested, like, maybe it's time we start trying to remember what happened. Because I was sort of convinced that I hadn't really been bullied. The ball was pushed so far down here that I was like, ah, I'm fine, like, you know, it happened, like, some kids just having fun. Then I went back and I just had this, like, I listened to a song called Amber by Flume, which makes me really emotional. So you open up, like, I don't want to call it like an emotional gateway, but you do something that sets you in this certain emotional state, and then I replayed it. And I replayed it from the perspective of actually in the first person. And it's surprising how graphic the memories will be, because they exist. And you basically get into this person's head and just play it through that. And then when you've done that, you come out of it, and then obviously you're in the room you're in, and then you have a little chat with yourself.
You have a what?
Chat with yourself. You're like, hey,
we're not there anymore.
And then, this is no word of a lie, I kid you not. The day after I did this was when I came up with Easy Grows Vision. This is not some sort of convenient lie, that is fucking truth. And I've probably got 10 of these that I don't know about, right? So this is like, and this isn't also like a binary blanket approach to solve everyone's mindset problem, but this is the thing that I did that had the biggest impact on my success. By a fucking margin.
But you were already very successful before that.
Yeah, I was doing like $100,000 a month. It was the most $100,000, most painful business to fail. We'd go up, we'd go down, and we'd go up, and we'd plateau.
There's a great analogy Carl Jung uses, and it says, a tree can't branch into heaven unless its roots are in the depths of hell.
Yeah.
So it's basically exactly what you're talking about, the shadow.
It's like the root to heaven, path to heaven is through hell. Yeah. And the best quote that summarizes this entire thing, I want everyone to write this down, from Carl Jung, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will rule your life and you will call it fate. Luck doesn't exist, fate doesn't exist, chance doesn't exist, trauma exists, and it directs your life.
Can you say it one more time, please?
Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will rule your life and you will call it fate. So if this resonates with you, the biggest form of leverage you have in your business is actually to fix this. It's not to fix your offer or your funnel, no. Because the thing is, we all know what to do. We all know what to build and like what to work on and like how to do things. Or if you don't, you can just figure it out. But every action you take to break down like the shit is coming from this place. And I am not done with this. I haven't tried to do this again since that, by the way, because it's like not a very nice thing to do.
I don't think it can ever be done from there.
No, maybe not. But you know, it's still exists to a degree. I still self-sabotage. I still do stupid shit when I don't want to. I'm still not fully in control of my behavior.
I mean, that's human, though. I mean, you're never not going to be...
No, it's just, you know, your emotion, basically.
Yeah. So when you find yourself in those states, like at the plateau or a dark area, I guess, what is your approach to either thinking through this or that situation? Do you try to step back from the business, focus on yourself, get that result, go back in? Do you do it when you have the time?
And so I did it like as an ongoing thing, like therapy, just like once every 2 weeks. But the sessions hit really fucking heavy. So I actually started this, because it always starts with a symptom. The cause is very different from the symptom. So I went to this shadow work coach, and I said to her, I was like, I can't seem to be consistent with work. Like, one minute I'll work really hard, and the next minute I'll do nothing. And I have this, like, oscillation. My entire life is an oscillation. I go up and down and up and down. And I've coached mindset for like 2 years at this point. So I thought I knew it. I was like, why the fuck am I still going up and down? Like, even after I know exactly how it's supposed to work. And so she broke that down. We talked about that for like 4 months before we even got to the whole like bullying thing. And I could try and explain like the reason behind it all, but it's going to take a long time. The summary is something like this. Like, fundamentally, part of me believes I don't deserve control. So every time I try and attain control, I break it back down. And it might be control. Another big one is shame. Another big one is power. These fundamental drives that sit at the root of our consciousness that we either lack or have too much of, they drive us. And if you don't try and rein them in, or keep, you're not trying to rein it in, you're just trying to integrate. Trying to go back to that person and say, hey man, like, I know that you think this is how it is, but let's just have a gander and you're fine. You're in control. All of those fears you've got, all of that terror, all of that trauma, you can relax. I got it. And that's why I say it. And this is where I think, is it Freud that learned from Jung, or Jung that learned from Freud? I don't know myself.
Jung learned from Freud.
Huh?
Jung learned from Freud.
Yeah. Okay, I get now. Jung's work was built on Freud. And Freud's, like, one of his, like, deepest thoughts was that, like, the adult is developed to protect the child. And so the adult cannot be developed to do anything else until the child is actually protected. And that's why it was my priority. So like I said, this might not be the case for everyone, but this was the biggest thing. Like, as soon as I did this, we went from, like, 200 grand a month to, like, 800 grand.
How do you protect that child?
Mm-hmm.
How do you protect that child?
Well, it's like I just explained, like, the integration.
Is that something that you could do on your own? Obviously,
you need someone to run you through it.
You need somebody, because a lot of us are talking yesterday, and insecurity is definitely a common trait.
If you try and do it on your own, you'll probably end up in the wrong spot.
In the wrong spot.
Because, like, the person I work with, I can tell you who it is. I think this talk's probably going to go on YouTube as well, so she might get quite a lot of people interested. But this cost me like couple of grand, and it made me like a couple of million. So it's the biggest form of ROI I've ever found. Like, it was good. Like, dude, once you make enough money, like, what's the point?
Well, where's that coming from? Where do you want to go?
I don't know. Like, once you gain the control, like, you've got, like, there's probably like at the root of the consciousness, there's probably like, I don't know how many there are, but there's a selection of drives that move us. And it's like, it's things like control, shame, judgment, power, envy, all these things, right? And so if you're not moving away from one, you're moving towards the other usually. The reason I say power, I don't mean power in the sense that I want to exert tyrannical control over other people. That's not like the objective at all. But more power in the sense that, like, I have more control over my behavior, power over myself, right? I don't know where that comes from. I've got a lot of work to do. I'll do this till the day I die. It doesn't stop, you know? Like, building Easy Grow was traumatic enough. There's probably a bold version. You know that scene from Harry Potter where Voldemort's under the under the thing? That was me. It's probably buried in there somewhere, right?
So if we wanted to do this, should we be looking for a Jungian therapist, shadow work specifically?
Yeah, shadow work specifically.
So do you have ongoing therapy at the moment, and is it strictly shadow work, or do you do...
I don't have it at the moment.
You don't have any therapy at all?
Not at the moment.
Why not?
Because it destroyed. So I haven't done it for... Where are we now? Yeah, after that, I haven't touched it for like 6 months. Because it's really heavy. It's like I had to do like a deload. Because it's heavy shit. to deal with all that. Like, you know, I'm gonna, I hopefully touch wood, touch whiteboard. I'll be here for like 85 to 100 years. You know, I fixed this problem, experienced this massive level of growth. Now I've got this sort of existential crisis where I'm like, okay, now I've got all the money I could possibly ever need ever. Now what? Listen, I don't want you guys to think that once you solve this problem, it's all sunshine and rainbows. Because I can tell you for free that once you make a ton of money and all you ever worked for was money, like, then what are you left with? So that's what I'm tackling at the moment. And like, this is where like, I'll attach like a bigger vision, and I know how to solve it. But it doesn't like, this sort of shit, like you just open one problem to solve another. And then you project, what happens when I'm a billionaire? Then what the fuck am I gonna do? Like, when you're a conscientious person, you find meaning and you derive fulfillment from working, not from things that happen as a result of the work. So for me, as long as I'm working, I'm happy. So really, to answer your question, like, the reason I said power is because I feel like I have power over my life when I'm working to control outcomes. It's like cause and effect. I can cause to effect. That's what power really is. Is it's being able to do something so that something happens that you want. And that's what I'm doing at the moment.
Can you say that one more time?
Which part?
The power.
So the power to me is like, the universe is governed by cause and effect. This is like the universal mechanism that drives the entire world. If I sneeze, you say bless you, if you're polite. So I can cause to effect, and that would be power, right? So for me, it's a control thing. It's still a control thing. It's probably not a power thing, it's a control thing. Now that I'm honest with myself about it, it's probably still a control thing. Like, I want to be able to do things so that I can make things happen that I want to happen. If I'm not doing this, I get really unhappy. I don't know why. It's going to take me 5 years to figure it out. I will. Maybe there's no answer. Maybe there's some things that we're not supposed to solve. There's no such thing as like a perfect mindset. This is the thing about mindset. Everyone's like, yeah, just wear blue light blockers. Wear blue light blockers and just don't eat carbs before 12. Mindset.
Speaking of cause and effect, if you could go back and take away that experience, would you?
No, absolutely not. God, no. Trauma is probably the strongest force. Like, it's the single greatest power you have. You know, there's two things that happen to people after trauma. It either destroys you or it builds you. And if it builds you, it's called post-traumatic growth. So if something bad happens and you use that as a way to develop yourself. Because if it happens, like, you're either going to let it destroy you by just burying it and not thinking about it, or you're going to build yourself up through it by trying to build something to get you away from it. But I would never, like, I'm grateful for it. Because if that hadn't happened to me, well, I don't know where I'd be. Probably, like, working for, like, Deloitte or something.
Interesting. Do you want to have children?
Yeah.
Would you be worried that they wouldn't go through enough trauma to be ambitious enough to achieve great things in life?
I worry about that when I have kids. Certain things I just don't want to worry about for now. Like, this is the thing, it's not like, when you have kids, you're not gonna be like, because you don't want your kids to go through trauma. That's the thing. You don't want them to, because it's not a nice experience. But like, life's gonna give it to them. Life gives it to everyone. So I'm not necessarily too concerned about that. But I know that if it happens to them, I'll have the tools and the framework to deal with it. Do you know what, actually, Jamie, one thing that I think might encapsulate this through what I'm trying to achieve is probably to be a good dad. That has a lot to do with it. My father's incredible. He's amazing. I love him. Wonderful. And if I can be like him, I'd have probably done a pretty good job. No, but it's not about money. Like, the whole mindset thing, figuring this all out, so that if it happens to my kids, I can be like, hey, I can help you. Then they'll probably be like, fuck off, Dad. Don't want your help, can I have a fiver? I'm like, oh, great. They were like, who's young?
I want to ask, like, Val, what are your insights in these? What are you doing? Why? What's your opinion? Because you guys are, like, complimenting each other, right? So, do you actually think just the same? The controls and stuff.
Yeah, you also gone through the show.
No, both got an opposite perspective to me. which is why it works so well.
Yeah, that's why I want
to know. I think that's what we need to talk about.
Because you go look at it and just be like, just don't even think about it, just do the work.
This is the thing, like, Joe and I have very different perspectives on this, and that's why it works really well.
But like, it's the same, Bo and I are on the same page then. Like, we won't go into it, but like, we're both working for a reason. You don't just wake up one day and decide to put yourselves through 10 years of hell for no reason.
There is a reason. This is not for no reason. When you have several million parties...
You've got kids. You've got kids.
Yeah.
So I think that might be also why you want to work. Kids is a great motivation. But this is the thing, I'm not like blanket terming everyone and saying everyone has trauma so everyone should do what I've done. I'm just showing what's worked for me. And I'm also just observing that it's not particularly normal for a human being to want to put themselves through insane levels of suffering to build something. Most people just want to wake up and go to work. But trauma exists, I don't know, this is, once again, blanket terming everyone, everyone has trauma. The difference is entrepreneurs just use it. I know you disagree because you don't have it. But that's fine. Like, when I say everyone has trauma, I'm talking about most people. I think everyone that everyone knows has been through something tough. They don't talk about or they don't want to bring up. And it's fine.
You might even not know that you have it. It's
there. Yeah, bro, I was convinced I wasn't bullied. I thought I was their friend.
It's impossible to go through life without having any trauma.
Well, if you do, you're
it's like a natural part of it. So, like saying, like, your parents will always.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's going to exist, so you might as well use it.
Yeah.
It's like an inevitable rule. So if something's going to happen, you might as well be like, okay, I need to learn how to deal with this. So I just took it to an extreme, and I made 800 grand a month.
Jung said it himself, like, shadow work would not work for everyone. It's sort of everyone has their own way of dealing with things. So different types of therapy, there's like a million different ways of dealing with these.
I just was like, I want to understand why I'm doing what I'm doing. I was just watching this, like, I think it's the most interesting thing is to figure yourself out. Same I'd way. Argue it's like one of the main purposes of life. Like, you've been given this body and this mind,
yeah.
Figure it out. It's really interesting. The more you know about yourself, like, the more you know what you're weak, you're strong. I find it really cool, very compelling.
John, did you know, before you mentioned that shadow, did you know, okay, I'm going to do this because of this exact instance where I know I was bullied, so I need to go and fix
no,
this?
No, I had no idea. It was just because, like, I booked the first call when I was building self-transcendence because I was like, oh, this shadow work thing, like, I've heard about it. I'll explore it and just see, like, what it's like and then maybe add a module on it. And then, yeah, I just went in with this thing and she was like, why are you here? I was like, oh, well, it's, honestly, I'm just curious to hear how it works. And then she was like, oh, well, look, if I want to show you how it works, like, maybe we just explore you. And I was like, okay. She was like, do you have any instances where it feels like you've got two versions of yourselves that are competing with each other? I was like, yeah. And she was like, tell me about it. And then 12 months later, like, yeah. Yeah, I stumbled into it. Very lucky. Otherwise, I would have just continued to self-sabotage.
Would you say there's probably two versions of yourself competing against each other?
Yeah. You're always going to have that.
Like, I'm watching self or just... Like a watching version of yourself, or just two versions of yourself that's like one's pulling the other.
That's why you've got like one that does all the work and one that destroys everything.
It's like a devil in an
angel. It's like you at 9 a.m. when you're taking sales calls and being behaved, and then you at like 9 p.m. later that day, like watching Netflix and just not that Netflix is necessarily bad, but
yeah.
You
yeah.
Doing like just scrolling through TikTok and eating junk food and just destroying everything.
How do you actually solve it and stuff like that, but like how do you live with it? Like how do you accept it? Well, that's my question. How do you accept it? How do you live with it? How do you, you know?
You have to do a lot of therapy, bro.
What?
You have to do a lot of therapy.
One of the things you said in self-transcendence, I believe, was that we don't actually have a self.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as it. And
no, we have a self.
One of the things that... I mean, I haven't been looking into all of my history and my current self. I've just been like, let me just build a new self. Let's not go back and do all of that. Let's just change
it. It's someone, though. That's not the self. It's just...
Yeah.
Just developing a new persona, who you want to be.
But in order for you to, this is what people don't understand, right? So there's three states of time. We've got the past, we've got the present, and we've got the future. So we can look at this from the perspective of, you know, psychology, the self. The way this works is, so the present self takes actions, and those actions develop the past self, right? Past self takes those actions and manifests them into effects that happen in the future. So the present affects the past, and the past affects the future.
Is it that again?
Present is where you do something, you take an action, and that obviously is then buried into your past, because time has now elapsed. What then happens is through second, third, fourth, fifth, eighth order consequences, is that action manifests through a series of ripple effects to create the future self. So what you're doing every day is waking up and just trying to do the right thing. Because if you do the right thing goes filtered into your past, and then in 25 years it comes into the future. Or 5 years, or 6 months, or 3 days, or 2 hours if you're on Instagram. And this is how it works. So what happens is, your question is, do I have to visit this? But you want to do something called ecstasies, which is basically the word used to describe a snake shedding its skin. In order for you to develop this future self, the present self needs to be perfect. In order for your present self to be perfect, you have to fix this. Because you've been, like, you've got to realize, so I'm 25, when I started I was 18, properly, right? What that meant is I had to undo 18 years of conditioning. Belief systems, stories, character traits, ideas, all of this, right? So the self exists, but my point in self-transcendence is that it's malleable, that it can change, that you at any moment can switch. If I decided tomorrow I wanted to be like a painter, if I gave myself like 3 years and enough repetition, I'd be a painter. I know that sounds like too good to be true, but that's actually how the brain, the psychology works. If you are open-minded enough to change, you can. So present affects the past determines the future, and the funny thing is what happens in the future then happens again in the present, because you relive it. And this is how your life is basically just one big cycle if you don't break the present. But how do you break the present? You break the past. If you go back and you figure out, why is my present situation the way it is? Well, it has to do with something that happened in the past. So yeah, there's probably a better way to explain that, but that's the best I can do, unfortunately.
Can I bring up the question I asked you over WhatsApp, which is the...
You just did.
So the question is, superficially, I of course know that I need to be telling myself, yes, I absolutely can become someone who can make $500,000 a month. But sort of, it feels too superficial. In the context of what you just said here, with the shadow work, present self, future self, and so on, what is the path for me so that, for example, I really genuinely believe that I can become someone who can make $100,000 a month. I don't see that as, the distance is not there. $500,000 a month, I see this as, currently, if I'm very honest, an unbridgeable abyss between myself and...
Yes, because it is. It's who you are right now, you can't do it.
Yeah.
You have to have faith in the person that you can be. So you're not looking to have faith in yourself. You're looking to have faith in the person you have to become to do it. Uh-huh. And then all you need to do is have the confidence that you can build into that person. You never go after the goal. You go after the character. So you have a version of yourself and you have your goal. The character achieves the goal. So you don't set a goal, you set a character. Because if I ask you, can you make $500,000 a month? You're going to say no.
Correct.
But if I ask you, can you learn the skills to become an entrepreneur who could do that? If I gave you 5 years in the right training, then you could.
Yeah.
So we can have faith and belief in our ability to become someone else, but the goal is completely irrelevant. We go after this. And by going after this and becoming that, we get this. It's obliquity. We achieve the thing through its opposite. So I'm not going after the billion thing. I'm going after being a billionaire.
Yeah.
Because if I can become the person that can do that, then I'll get it.
So confidence in the ability that you can become that.
No, you're having confidence in who you have to be. Because, look, would you have confidence in my ability to make 500 grand a month?
Yes.
Exactly. So you know that it's possible, but with where you are right now, you cannot. So you need to change.
How do you know what you have to do? Like, to be a billionaire, are you looking at Elon Musk?
Just look at people that are billionaires.
Yeah.
It's a simple equation. Like, if I ask, like, what you do is you start filtering your behavior through the question of, would the person I need to become do this? That's how you do it. That's how I did it to like 100 grand a month, million a month. It's like, you know, when I was taking sales calls and I didn't want to take sales calls, like I wanted to keep taking sales calls and not outsource them. And I was like, would $1 million a month try to do that? Fuck no. He'd have his hands on his hips right now being like, what the fuck are you doing? Right? Now, the thing is the billionaire thing like is the big goal, but like I'm more concerned with just figuring out how to make like 9 figures next. Because if you're not careful, you can set a goal that is just so huge that you just think, how the f***? There's no way in hell. But I know there's enough iterations and like, you know, I've got Charlie version 0, which is when I was basically born. And then Charlie version 1, which is being bullied. And then Charlie version 2, which is just turning to video games to hide the pain. And then version 3, when I see the Ty Lopez ad. And then I've got version 4, where I take Sam Evans' course and start making some money. Version 5, 10 grand a month, buying an Audi and getting girls and plateauing and being in all this pain. Version 6, when I start partnering with Bo and we start making proper money. Version 7, when Northlobe actually gets big. Version 8 is when we start Imperium, different, completely different person, right? Version 9 is when Imperium starts to grow. Version 10 is after the shadow work. Version 11 is probably like now. So I'm going to go through probably 58 of those before I get to billionaire. But this is how it works, is you just jump between characters and you never at any moment attach yourself to who you are. Because if you want to stay where you are, just stay as who you are. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing to be ashamed of, nothing to be guilty about. If you're happy with your life and you where you are is where you want to be, then don't change. But if you have this conflict where what you want is out of alignment with what you can achieve, then you have no choice but to go through this model.
Okay. All right. So I got one more thing.
Okay.
Sometimes I feel like I want to build this massive thing, but sometimes I feel like I actually don't want to be bothered to work. I'm kind of lazy, but I know that in order to build this massive thing, I actually have to work.
That's what we just talked about. So there's two Jadens. There's Jaden 1.
Yeah.
And there's Jaden 2. Jaden 1 wants to build. Jaden 2 wants to destroy. You can't build if you're trying to destroy at the same time. All of this, like laziness, procrastination, like any synonym of doing something that you know is counterintuitive to what you want to create is probably a symptom of something that happened to you when you were a kid. And all you're doing through this thing is trying to relive the trauma. Not intentionally, but part of you is convinced that it exists. So that's obviously quite a very heavy-hitting thing, and you guys know me, I'll happily go there. What else do you guys want to talk about to do with mindset?
One more. So yep. I think we all resonate with the things. We're trying to get better every time. And we're constantly, let's say the goal is 10K per month, we get there, but it doesn't change anything, then the goal goes to 25 and 50, it changes.
And it changes everything.
Yes, but you always have another goal, you always have something bigger to go for.
Yeah, so I do this if I ever go running, like what I'll do.
I suppose the question is,
yeah.
The worry that for me comes about is anytime I hit the goal, there's something else. And I'm not happy with myself until I get there.
Welcome to life, mate.
What's that?
Welcome to life.
What do you think is there ever a place you're going to be happy with yourself? No.
I strongly doubt it. And I'm cool with that. Because I'm not looking to be happy, I'm looking to be proud. I don't care about happiness. I don't care. Like, happiness, like obviously, it feels great, but like I just want to be proud. I want to look back.
It's like everyone's trying to optimize for happiness.
But if you want to optimize for happiness, just go and lie in a hospital bed and hook yourself up some morphine.
Yeah. It's not necessarily that happiness is always the thing to optimize for. Because then you run into like short-term gratification.
But look, this is the thing. It's like the whole like this idea of this thing that you've just described, this sort of hamster wheel, where you're trying to achieve something, you achieve it, it feels great for a minute, and then it doesn't. And you want something else. It's just life.
It doesn't Does that apply to being proud that you hit the thing, but you're not going to be proud of yourself until you get there?
I'm proud of who I become, not what I achieve. The achievement doesn't matter. What matters is the character. If I can look back when I'm 85 years old, everyone assumes life has a meaning. We all assume life has a meaning, like why? Why can't the meaning just be like to develop yourself into the strongest, highest version of yourself humanly possible in the time you've been given? That to me is meaning. I don't care about being happy, I care about living a meaningful life.
Are you proud now?
No. But this is the thing, no. The problem with pride is I won't go into that quote. It's too much of a soft topic. The problem with pride is once you feel proud, you stop trying. The father who thinks he's a good father is no longer a good father. As soon as you think you're it, you stop trying. Pride is probably the wrong word. Like, I don't know if I've got a word for it. But my point is that, like, I just want to continue building myself. And I use the business as a vehicle to do that. The business is important, but the main reason I'm doing everything probably is just to keep building myself. And that's good enough for me. And I'll never be happy with it. But I'm not looking for happiness. Maybe it's a perfection thing. There's probably something down here. But this all assumes that there's one optimal way to live your life, and there's not. For me, I know that when I feel good, when I feel protected from neurotic emotion, when I feel like suffering is at its most minimal and fulfillment is at its most optimal, is when I am going through something tough to build myself. I find the good comes out of the bad. And that's why I look for it. And that's building a business is one of the most painful things you can do, with probably the exception of going to war. There's a lot more things that are more painful than building a business, right? But what's more painful than building a business is building nothing.
Are you happy now?
Yes.
Happiness is like an emotion.
Happiness is like, you can ask... Dude, yeah, you could ask, like, maybe tonight I get food poisoning. And then tomorrow you ask me, are you happy? I'd be like, no. But if what you're trying to gauge is like, am I happy with myself? Yeah. Like, I'm happy with who I've become, right? In that element. But I'd be, how the fuck do I? So it comes back to this, right? I'm here. This is me now, version 11 or whatever the fuck it is. And I'm trying to get to version 12, right? I'm happy when I'm bridging this gap. I'm not happy to be this person. I'm not happy to be this person. I'm happy to be on that journey. And I don't want to use the quote, it's all about the journey, but it kind of is.
You're happy with what you're doing.
I'm happy with what I'm doing for as long as it fulfills this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So if I'm doing behaviors and acting and causing things to happen that make me stay here, not necessarily stay, but more importantly, regress back to version 10, then I'm unhappy. So right now, in this current state where I am stood right now, with this day and how this has gone, I am happy. But if tomorrow I woke up and I binge watched like YouTube videos, spent the entire day scrolling through Instagram reels, watched a load of porn and ate McDonald's 3 times, I'd be unhappy. So my behavior as a vehicle for me to achieve what I want is what makes me happy or unhappy. And also what makes me proud or not proud. Because you can only really be proud of your actions. And I think pride comes when you behave in alignment with your values. That's when I feel proud. If there's a temptation to do something that I shouldn't do and it conflicts with my value system and I don't do it, then I feel proud I haven't done it.
I think the worry that because I think we're all the same, we're all trying to continue moving, is are we ever going to feel like we have enough?
No, you won't. Look at anyone successful ever. Alexander the Great like didn't want to stop conquering. His army told him to turn around. The dude had conquered like the known world. And his army were like, nope, enough's enough. We've been at this for like, you know, decade now. Decade, pretty accurate, right? Genghis Khan, Napoleon, Hannibal, Caesar, they all did the same. And all these billionaires, it's like people are like, oh, you haven't got enough money? It's not about money for them. It's about progress. Money is a arbitrary currency used to denote the trajectory towards a goal. And that's where meaning comes from. That's why billionaires want to make more money. They don't need more money, but they need to feel like they're continuing to do it because that's what they're familiar with. It's where they feel safe and protected.
So on that point, you never think you'll get to a point where you'll be happy with your current version?
No. Probably not. It'll probably change when I have kids. I think that's when my entire psychology will shift. That's my hunch. Because then it's about being a good dad, not about being a good entrepreneur. And I'll try and balance both. And I think that's probably true for you as well.
What does Charlie version 12, sorry. No, okay. What does Charlie version 12, no, what is he like that you currently are not like?
Less complacent.
Less complacent.
Yeah. Benji?
Sorry.
Sure, it's okay.
With our conversation yesterday, what are your points in terms of like burnout and all that like happened and like with all this? Because I'm just trying to connect what I've done for the past 3 months.
Yeah.
Going basically, you know, ongoing dark mode, ignoring, going, no, what do you call it when you build a fort and build as you grow? Whatever, like,
going fuck off mode. Fuck mode.
Don't eat, don't sleep, that like fucking passing out, picking up from the hospital, going back, all this stuff, so, which is obviously a burnout, right? And obviously build up the things. And I just wanted to know like, what's like your point of view there with all
this. So this is a really interesting thing because this is like self-sabotage in disguise. You're self-sabotaging through work. I know. Because this is what happens if you don't know yourself, right? So what you're doing is there's two Benjis. There's Benji number one. You got right? Benji number one and Benji number two, right? Benji number two. Oh yeah, shit.
What happened
here? Yeah, you'll be gone. So this is the good Benji and this is the bad Benji, right? This Benji understands you very well. And so what it does is just hear me out. This Benji, the Benji number two, which is bad, will disguise its intentions through the good. And so it knows that if it just lets this Benji go and go and go and go and go as hard as he possibly can and push himself as much as he can for as long as he can, for as long as he can, for as long as he can, he'll crash. And then this Benji gets what he wants through that. So it's like a fucking mind, it's like a mindset, like it's like a fucking parasite. Like it knows that if it just lets you loose on the good side, that you will meet the bad side. Anything taken to its extreme becomes its opposite. Right? So if you take work to its extreme, this is what I figured out, and this is what I had to do, because this was the symptom of that entire shadow work thing. Right? Is I was balancing these two dichotomies between discipline and laziness. And if you take, for me, if I take laziness to an extreme, I eventually hate myself and feel shameful, and then I become disciplined. So it cycles around. But if I take the discipline to an extreme and don't give myself a break, then I become lazy.
Because
you burn the fuck out. Yeah, your body is like too much cortisol, too much stress, too much psychological baggage, like shit. So what I learned to do now, and this was the whole point of the shadow work thing and how this manifested, is I now have the ability to control this. If I need to lock in, if it requires it of me, I will do it. But at the same time, I can start to read the signs. So if I lock in for too long and I start to break and burn, I will flip straight to this side. And then if I'm here for too long and I start to think, I'll just flip straight back. So, whoop, whoop. So I can now do both. And this is power. Huh? But look, most of the time I'm sort of sat like here. Yeah, but if I need to, I'll be here. But then if I'm here for too long and I burn myself out, then, for example, if I did this mastermind for like 7 days straight, this would happen for like 14 days. And then if this happened for 14 days, then I'd be miserable and I'd hate myself because I'd be like, why have I done all this stupid shit? And then I'd be back there. And you guys probably resonate with this, right? But this is the clearest sign that something's going on.
So that plus, on that, it's like emotions and all things. Because obviously, when you go on the second side, which I wouldn't call discipline at this point, but like, let's say it's, well, you know, you stop eating, stop doing. Obviously, there are emotions happening. And,
yeah, so.
You told me yesterday that I didn't even realize that just some sort of way or form, I just forgot that I was human. And I had emotions, and I like kicked up a pile
of people and stuff. Yeah, so you have what I would call, and there's probably a proper name for it, you have emotional thresholds, right?
Okay.
And this is where you can bury something for a certain period of time with a certain level of intensity before it comes up and bang, in your face explodes. So what's happening is if you've got laziness here, and discipline here. You stay here for too long, right? You start to feel tired, right? You start to feel exhausted. Maybe you start getting irritable. Like you guys can tell when I'm about to burn out. Like if I'm on like a team call, I'm like snapping at you and like being a dick and like, you know, and you as well will probably tell when I'm like near it. Vince, what's the main thing that happens to me when I burn out that you notice?
You become a dick.
Yeah, I become a dick. Yeah, I'll become like a dick, right? It's irritable. And if I like, these are the emotions that happen. So then when this starts to happen, I just revert to this. And if I'm here for too long, I also become a dick because I end up hating myself. I feel like shameful. I feel angry. But then what happens is these emotions turn into, they're like productive emotions. They serve the purpose of bringing me back to the state where I'm ready to go to discipline mode again. Right? So this hate and anger turns into motivation, essentially. Because it's like a control thing. If I let the hate sit for too long, something bad would happen. So it just, my brain's like, we don't want to do that. We'll just, you know, we'll use this and we'll convert it like emotional alchemy or something. We'll turn it into motivation, confidence.
Yeah, just fueling.
Yeah, and then the motivation turns into the discipline, which then turns into the irritable thing. Because this might not be true. These are usually more like comfort, complacency. But this is what I lived for like 5 years. And then I was like, okay, I'll do this shadow work thing. And now I can go between the two. So I'm much more dynamic. Right.
Without having to go through the motivational.
I'm still not perfect at this at the moment. But like, you know, for example, like if I tell myself I need to go to the gym five days this week, and I get to day four, and I'm just not recovered, I just won't go.
Yes.
And to most people in this online sphere, that's a bad thing, because they're like, you should do the hard work no matter what. But I've always done the hard work no matter what, and it always ends up with me doing the opposite.
Calibrating.
Yeah, it's a calibration. Yeah. Exactly.
Go on. So that drives into the last question, which is, I don't know, maybe it's working with audiences and all these users, but I just feel a little bit sociopath. So it's just literally like, just hate for people and like, just don't want to be, you know, like, just finding people being stupid. I don't know if you've probably had this or if it's like a high mindset thing or whatever that is. But it's just, you just end up like, hating people in general. Not hating, like, going,
no, because
like,
it's
like, but like, yeah, not like, no one. But what I do is like, I just don't want to be around people. I just don't want to be out. I just want to be more alone. I just want to be more like these kind of people. You know, it just drives me to a thing where I'm projecting. Like, it's when I have it in me, it's kind of like, all right. But when I start projecting it, I'll be like, well, it doesn't feel all right.
Yeah, so other people allow us to mirror our emotions onto them. So the other people allow us to mirror ourselves and the way we feel about ourselves onto them.
Yes.
So if you've ever judged someone before, it's because you're afraid of seeing that in yourself. So I used to judge fat people. I used to like not like fat people and be like, you're fat, I hate you.
Okay.
And then like what I realized is the reason I was doing that was because I was terrified of being fat. Yes. It's a defense mechanism. My brain does not want that. So every time it sees a fat person, it's going to say that. And then I realized it was just, I was being dumb. Like, I don't, this is why I don't really judge people anymore. Because, if you're judging someone, it's because you're uncomfortable with yourself. Like, I'll say it again. If you're judging someone else, it's because you are uncomfortable with yourself. And I'll be the first to admit that, because I still judge people. I try not to. And there's this quote from Jordan Peterson that says that people don't have ideas. Ideas have people. It's like the same with belief systems. Like, you don't have a belief. That belief has you. And it's fucking grips. Controls you.
Got it. I think I just realized why I don't have a YouTube channel. I'm scared of posting videos.
Yeah, because you've probably been... Yeah, so this is exactly why it took me, like, a whole year to do thumbnails.
Yeah.
Because I looked at people on YouTube and I was like, these clickbait thumbnails, this short-form content, these fancy titles. I wore a bunch of dicks, narcissistic, and then...
You turn up into your own villain?
No, not really. I just looked at it and I was like, I'm judging these people because I'm afraid of people judging me for doing it because I'm judging other people. Oh. The only way you can fear judgment is if you judge other people. Because as soon as you remove judging other people, you no longer expect it from other people. It's the biggest hack to like being like a YouTuber or something.
Perfect.
Because why would you be worried about something if you're not going to judge people for it?
Thank you. Yeah, much appreciated.
Won't you remember you judging it in the past? Won't you remember you judging it in the past?
Sure. Yeah, of course.
So if you stop judging someone for something, then you're saying, won't you be scared to do that?
You're still going to be conditioned and you're still going to be afraid a little bit. But like my point is that if I go outside now and someone walks past me and I judge them, that means I cannot behave in that way. So this is how you effectively snooker yourself. And this is how you can really like completely ruin your business. It's like, let's say, for example,
cold email,
right? So this is a perfect example, cold calling. If every time you let's say you receive a cold call from someone from India, and you take the phone, you put it down and say, what a dick. You cannot make cold calls anymore. Because you are now convinced that every time you make a cold call, someone is going to think you're a dick. So this is the big thing, like you completely trap yourself by judging people. Because like this is also this non-binary thing where you need to be both. Like if I judge someone for doing something specific, and I then later on in life need to do that thing to get my goal, I can't behave like it because I'm afraid people are going to judge me. But the thing with the judgment thing is like, as soon as you judge someone that you can no longer, it's like, imagine you're playing a video game and as you walk through life, every time you judge someone, that behavior is locked and you can no longer behave in that way. Now, I'm not saying that you'd necessarily need to wear a dress and I'm not saying who you should and shouldn't judge. You can disagree with them and that's fine. But as soon as you project your insecurity onto them, you lose. It's kind of like, you know, like friends of mine, like I'll get into arguments and then I realize like, what am I doing? Like you act and believe how you want. As long as it doesn't lead to communism, I don't care. You know, as long as it doesn't like directly, like this is the thing. This is how I sort of deal with it. Like if something bad happens or if someone's behaving in a certain way, I will tell myself, as long as it doesn't hurt me or someone I love, I don't care. You know, I was seeing this girl and she was talking to me about this Palestine-Israel conflict. She was really polarized towards one specific type. I haven't educated myself on it because I haven't been looking at it. I've just been working. And she got so angry at me for not having educated myself. And I just said, okay. It's like, I hear you. I understand. Completely disarmed her. Not because I'm trying to like be a dick, but truly because I'm not going to judge you for being angry about something you're passionate about because you believe in it. I could get all riled up and upset and angry, but I was just like, do you know what? Fair enough. I understand. I'm not agreeing with her. I'm just saying I understand. You can understand with someone, you can empathize with someone's position without disagreeing with them. And if you do that, they can't attack you. As soon as you attack them back, you lose. By engaging, you lose. Okay?
What do you think, or what does the character look like of somebody that's capable of being misunderstood what are some of the main character traits? What are the values?
Well, there's a thousand ways to skin a cat.
Yeah.
So there's no like one way. Being able to release control.
What?
Being able to release control. Releasing control to other people is a big one. Because this is decentralization. Being able to actually sort of give it to someone else and not freak out and overmanage is a huge one. Persuasion is a big one. And it's not actually about what you do, it's about what you don't do. Because you probably know what to do. Build a course, build some outreach systems, iterate, test, scientific method, hire some sales reps, put up with some ones, hire some good ones. Then you add this thing that everyone forgets, which is time. Understand, Bo summarized this so perfectly the other day when you said on the coaching call that someone asked you, like, what do you wish someone told you when you were younger? And you said, results are guaranteed, speed is not. And I was like, ooh, why didn't I think of that, you know? and then also patience. Patience is probably one of the biggest ones that everyone lacks because you have to give it time. Like you all want to make 100 grand, you all probably want to make 100 grand a month and all of you in your minds right now are thinking, I'm going to try and do it in the next 3 months, next 6 months.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah, but I've been in, but this is the thing, right? I was talking to Benji last night. So Benji and I are both 25 years old, right? And obviously we're at different levels. So I'm 25. Benji's 25. When did you start your business? A year ago?
A year ago.
You are 1 year old in business terms. I'm 8 years old in business terms. So although you might compare yourself to me because of our age, you have to look at how long it's taken. And not only that, not only your business age, but also what, who influenced you. Because if I didn't have Sam Evans, I'd be fucked. So you can't, this is the thing with comparing yourself to other people, is their circumstances and initial conditions are so vastly different to yours that it's not fair to put yourself in the same race.
I'm 7 years old in business terms.
Mm-hmm.
I signed up with Sam Evans in 2018. So I beat myself up.
Fair enough.
Slow.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But you've also had a
what should I do about this? Wow.
Sorry. You've had a completely different life path.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? But what should I do
you, about you had no trauma.
Huh?
Right? You haven't got anything that you're fighting.
That's true.
Anyone want to stab Michael?
Yeah.
No!
Charlie, do you have a mentor now?
Not really. I'm struggling to find a really good one. Bo is a massive mentor, and I'm not just saying that to blow smoke up at his ass. And I know that might seem weird because he's still younger than me, but he acts like an 85 years old. No, I'm serious. I said to him last night, I was like, I don't want to know how you're going to behave when you're like 80. You're going to like transcend human knowledge or something. Yeah, I'm trying to find someone that's as good as Sam. But also, this is the thing, right? Like, I don't quite know exactly what vehicle is going to get me to the billion thing yet.
Yeah.
I still know that I can still learn a lot from Sam. I've been learning from Sam and exclusively Sam for 8 years, 7 years, 6 years, whatever, right? And I'm probably like 30%, not even that, in terms of what I could have learned. I just stick to one person.
Do you recommend that everybody in this room has a mentor?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Usually the best mentor is the person you need to become. Everyone's like, who should I look up to? It's like, just look up to the next version of yourself.
And what do you class as a mentor? Because we're having this discussion yesterday. Today's been really tough to talk about, but we're having this discussion. In some ways, the pastor is a mentor. You learn a lot from your content. Well, then in other ways, you expect a mentor to have consistent one-on-one communication.
No, you don't.
So a mentor can be somebody...
Dude, you learn... Dude, I've never met Sam Evans. No. I hadn't met Bo for the first 6 years of business. He was a voice on the phone.
That's correct. And that's why you knew me for 6 years.
That was 6 years. Weird.
It was six to me.
Well, I think it's two things. Well, first of all, it was COVID, so that kind of messed up for 2 years. And I think the other thing is this was working out so well, I don't know.
I think it also got to the point where it'd been so long, it'd be weird to meet.
Yeah.
So every day that elapsed, it got weirder that we hadn't met, so we just never met. But the first time we met was last year, and we were in Covent Garden. And it was in Covent Garden, and Bo was like, we both go into the same Airbnb, and Bo was outside, and I was walking there, and I saw him, and I was like, oh my God, he's real.
Well, like, it was strange. The team met
it was
both.
Really, really, really weird.
Here's the funny part. The team met Bo before Charlie did. That's the funny part. That's crazy.
That's really great.
Yeah. On the mentor thing, you don't need to have one-on-one communication. You just need to listen to what they say.
So my mentors are on YouTube, like Jordan Peterson, and it changes every like, couple of years.
Yeah, see, in that case, I do have mentors.
Yeah.
So you've never had a direct mentor?
Okay. I had, during my apprenticeship when I was like 17, 18, I had a guy called Alan,
yeah,
who sort of taught me how to run a business. And he was great. He was like, I did meet him every day, and he sort of turned the consumer into a business owner in that element. But then beyond that, I was sort of on my own, which was really good.
So when you say you're looking for someone, what are you? Like,
well, I'm not actively looking for a mentor.
I'm saying, okay. But if you found one, would you, like, let's say this guy's probably not on YouTube.
I can't really, I can't really find the mentor until I end up with him. So, say in 5 years' time, it makes sense for me to go to do that. Then I'm fine. But for now, still to this day, who was going to include the best? Sam. You can argue Cole Gordon nearly now, but I still think Sam is, like, keeping bounds ahead of everyone. So, for me, like, all of the fundamentals he teaches so far. It's not, like, you guys will have to understand this, it's not about learning new things, it's about remembering things and doing that. Very important.
And he's a member more than that.
When he was in there from Sam, that been through his content online, of course. You said you went to his mastermind as well.
So yeah, some of the mastermind. Like the recordings on YouTube and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just lapped it up, man. All just video content. Like I listen, there's a video he has on YouTube called The Genius of Contradiction. And I listen to that every Sunday for 2 years. It's like 2.5 hours of non-binary thinking. And at the start, I didn't get it. I was like, what does this mean? And then Sam said in the video, like everyone who I've met who's really successful knows this. And I was like, okay, I'll just block out everything else and just listen to that one video. And now I can do this non-binary thing. And you guys are like, how the hell do you do that? It's like, I just reminded myself of it every week for 2 years. Now I can explain it and teach it. Like if you really want to integrate a piece of knowledge into your arsenal, you have to just block everything else out and keep it. Like I knew that non-binary thinking and critical thinking and idiosyncratic thinking and, you know, Socratic reasoning, all of these tools would be more useful than like the new self-help book that's Amazon bestseller. Like if I'm going to read, I'll just read Discourses by Epictetus or Letters from the Stoic by Seneca. Because I know like there's sometimes when it comes to knowledge, less truly is more. Sure. There's a lot more than this, but I'm drawing a bit of a blank after.
What is the second law of reasoning?
Socratic reasoning. Socratic reasoning. There's a ton more.
I shared a link from WhatsApp. WhatsApp group. It's just different thinking models that leave the website.
Yeah, there's like probably like 20 of them, but I can't really think right now, which is ironic considering we're talking about thinking. What else? There's loads more. This is like the acquisition genesis problem where like you know it, but trying to like compute it and teach it is like really fucking difficult. Idiosyncrasy is basically the idea that if everyone's doing something, you do the opposite. It's like anyone who's ever done anything amazing ever is weird. They're different, not normal. Non-binary thinking is basically the premise of like not polarizing yourself to any extreme, never attaching yourself to a specific thing, always being able to flip between, you know, two variables and being able to change yourself based on what is best. Primary example of non-binary thinking is Michael Jordan. So Michael Jordan, when he was best basketball player, back in his day, basketball players were either offensive or defensive. He did both. Another example is Alex Honnold. Who's familiar? Who's ever watched, what's it called?
Free Solo.
Free Solo. Who's seen Free Solo? So Free Solo is a documentary of a guy called Alex Honnold who climbs El Capitan, like the biggest like rock face. He does it without a rope. But he does it, it takes most people El Cap. It takes most people like a week to climb the wall. And they do it with a rope. But the other, so with climbing, you've got bouldering and you've got like free wall climbing, right? So bouldering, you know, we'll just put the B here. Bouldering is where you're trying to get up real fast and, you know, you're trying to solve problems and do it real fast. Vince can attest to this. And then free wall climbing is like where you're sort of like more methodical, taking your time, right? Alex climbed El Cap, which is the biggest free challenge ever, like a boulderer. Did it in 4 hours. This is another example of non-binary thinking, where everyone either behaves like this or like this, but you do both. It's why, like, if you look at outreach, what's the best way to do outreach, quality or quantity? Just do both, quant quality, right? That's, if you can do this, but the problem is people struggle to do this because as a human, your natural instinct is to attach your identity to like one side of the coin. So there's a ton of examples, like Mike Tyson. He was as fast as a lightweight boxer, but hit as hard as a heavyweight boxer.
John Jones, cocaine on the weekend.
Nice.
You see it a lot in sports like Tiger Woods as well. Like Tiger Woods would, but when Tiger Woods became like a professional, golfers didn't really take care of their health. They weren't like ripped and have six packs and they, you know, but Tiger Woods, like, he was like, I'm going to take the fitness thing seriously and also take the golf seriously and do both of them better than anyone else. And he just destroyed everyone.
Christian, same thing.
Everyone who's anyone who's ever done anything incredible, any massive scientific breakthrough, incredible athlete, incredible entrepreneur, is able to be both of everything whenever it demands of them. You know, if you look at one of the best quarterbacks in American football, Patrick Mahomes. He can throw as well as he can run. And so the defense can't, to be fair, he throws way better than he can run. But like he has the ability to do both. So the defense doesn't know what the f*** is going to do next. So you can find a lot of examples of this in sport. And I could do like a whole thing on this. I'll go through these and then maybe we just pick one and just focus on it. Socratic reasoning we touched on. This is basically just asking why. Oh, I thought of another one. Mm-hmm. Socratic reasoning developed by Socrates in the old Greek times. Why? You do this to get to a first principle. Critical thinking is your ability to question things, to see past authority, and to actually think for yourself. I could do like once again like a 5-hour thing on that. But this is, sort of ties into Socratic reasoning because you're trying to get to the bottom of things and like ask why. But for me, critical thinking is more about like, so difficult to articulate. It's kind of like how with you guys, I can find the problem immediately. Like you know exactly what questions to ask, how to get to the bottom of something, how to just clearly define something and deal with it. So like, for example, if I'm scrolling through Facebook and I see like someone talk about something, I won't just assume it's true. If I see a doctor say something, I won't just assume it's true. You go and find out why. You find the source. Primary example is that 9% corporation tax, wealthy expat. Someone made a video, relatively well respected, very well respected with Dubai tax. He's like, the 9% corporation tax is coming in. Everyone freaks out. I'm like, where's your source? I found the source. I asked them for their source. And I found their source and I asked them for their source. They couldn't give it to me. That's critical thinking. So what happens is like the enemy of critical thinking is authority, because you give someone this, and this happened at our company recently. We all know what's going on. You give someone this massive credibility because of perceived authority and assume that everything they do is right and true. You guys should challenge everything I've told you this weekend. Don't just assume it's true because I say it's true because you trust me. Challenge it. Why? See if there's a point of critical reasoning, because there should be. If someone's thought something through and is prepared to teach it, they should be able to have it pulled apart. That's critical thinking. Asymmetry is basically the premise where like you've got inputs and you've got outputs. This is also called leverage. So there's that quote that says, give me a lever big enough and I'll move the world. What you're looking for in business is asymmetry, where you can put very little in and get a lot out. Prime example is YouTube. I could spend an hour a week on YouTube videos and get 500 appointments a month. That's huge leverage. A smaller input requires bigger output. And the thing is this is the product, right? What's the biggest form of asymmetric leverage you have in your business? It's the product. It's the thing that you actually sell. What's the thing everyone doesn't focus on? The product. Obliquity is a mental model. You guys will have seen me probably use it. It's where you achieve something through its opposite. So, prime example, the route to heaven is through hell, right? Like if you want to achieve a goal, you achieve it by becoming the person that can achieve that goal. That's obliquity. You don't go after the thing, you don't go after the effect, you go after the cause, because you can control the cause. First principles is the ability to reason and know what you're dealing with. So you get to the very bottom of it, the very core, the truth. What is something about this thing that cannot be further questioned or disproven? For example, what is the first principle of psychology? Pain avoidance. You can't disprove pain avoidance. It is one of the most fundamental truths of the human condition. You could just call it pain or suffering, right? So when you understand for the first principles of an idea, another example, what's one of the core first principles of economics? Supply and demand. So what you're looking to do, and this feeds into this point here, which is called multidisciplinary thinking, this is where you take ideas, first principles, and premises from other disciplines and apply them to your business. So you guys have probably seen me do this a lot, where I'll be talking about biology, and then chemistry, and then maths, and then physics, and then systems thinking, and systems theory. Then I'm diving into economics, then I'm diving into law, then I'm over here, then I'm talking about the English language, for no reason, right? Like, the thing is, this is like a practice. I've been doing this for like 7 years. It takes a long, long time to develop this. But this is the weapon. You know, earlier when I think it was you that asked the question earlier about like, how do you build a good product? And I said, a good product comes out of a good founder. Like, what's a good founder? It's just your ability to think. and process information. Because as if you're selling information, what you're doing is collecting external stimuli into your brain, sorting it through, getting rid of the keeping the good stuff, and teaching it to your clients. So you're like a system that receives information and pumps out information. And the quality of your product is determined by your ability to reason through that information with tools like this. So multidisciplinary thinking is a huge one. What I did, which I'm very glad I did when I was 18 or 19, was buy all of the core textbooks for the main sort of disciplines for universities, like the first year textbooks, and read them. Everything from evolutionary psychology to chemistry. Don't ask me to recite it all because I can't remember it, but it's all up here. So when I need to use it, like the phoneme thing, I can be like, oh yeah, this thing my girlfriend told me like 5 years ago, right? And by understanding these multidisciplinary thinking first principles, you can explain everything. Like if someone's got a problem, I can be like, oh, I can, like a prime example is in chemistry, there's a principle called alloying. Alloying is basically where you take two compounds and put them together to make a stronger one. It's how steel is made, right? So if I'm looking at outreach and I'm like, how can I make the best outreach strategy? We've got quality, quantity, what if we alloy them? Now we have something stronger than the two parts, just because of some random thing I read when I was younger, right? And this is also why, you know, when like people are at school and they're like, oh, when are we ever going to use this in the real world? You'd be very surprised. Very surprised. You know, if you're doing geography and you're learning about coastal erosion and then you want to explain why you're losing clients, just entropy, right? But you wouldn't think to use it, but like if you have this ability, everything is explainable. And then you can see everything really fucking clearly. And I've still got a long, 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 long way to go with this. But there's a great series of books called, I think, The Great Mental Models. And it's a 3-volume series of books. They're red. And there's one on chemistry, biology, and physics. There's one on systems thinking and mathematics. And another one on general thinking concepts. Another mental model that you can just pull out of thin air is called Hanlon's Razor, which explains that do not attribute to malice that which can easily be explained by stupidity. Prime example, that girl getting angry at me for not being educated. How do I deal with this? Hanlon's Razor. You don't think about using it. You just use it because you know it. Like, I'm not going to get angry at her because I do not want to attribute to malice that which can easily be explained by stupidity. Same thing if someone like cuts you off in traffic. You're not like going to, instead of being angry and being like, what a dick, just be like, oh, he probably made a mistake. He's probably just being stupid. I've been stupid. We've all been stupid. Then stoicism. That's a big one. Yeah. Any questions?
Not related to this, but something else. So somebody else's question about this, if not, I want to go back to one of the character traits you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like my biggest weakness is the over-management component, and also the thing that I need the most to succeed as I run out of bandwidth to just do everything by myself. So I'm curious your mindset and approach to those situations where you obviously hold yourself to a high standard and somebody else, maybe they make a mistake, something that you wouldn't have done, and like how you handle yourself in that situation. Because initially I feel like I blame them and like they should have done better, and now I'm like, blame me, I should have done better training them or whatever. And now I'm to the point of like, I don't really know the best way to approach the management, development, and influence of the people when they're on the team if an issue does occur.
Can you simplify the question?
Sorry?
Can you simplify the question?
Simplify the question. Yeah, I guess your approach to having that character trait of not over-management, not building up.
Give them time. And trust them. If you had the faith in them to have them do the job, like if you had the faith to hire them, you should have the faith for them to fix their own problems.
How much time?
I don't know. So contextual. This is like a binary thinking example. And it's fine, right? You know, we're all guilty of it. But like when you ask a question like that, like how much time should I give someone? It's binary. Everything is dependent on the context. And so if you're not careful, if I say 3 months, you're then going to apply that to everything. To the man with a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. This is why I don't like giving general advice. It's why if someone asks me like, what should I do in this scenario? I'm like, well, it depends. Everything depends.